I was reading in Funny Times an article titled State of the Universe Address by Swami Biyanananda. Swami Biyanananda is the alter ego and brainchild of author and humorist Steve Behrman. And he says, "Greetings, Mirthlings. Welcome to the state of the universe, which is, of course, ever-changing, same as always. So, are you finally ready to live in the now? Good. We have been waiting for you. With time rapidly becoming a thing of the past, the calendar's days are numbered, you know, people are living in the now like never before. Listen, I know. I was a futurist in a past life. But now I have no time for time. I am living all the time in the timeless now. I think they call that Alzheimer's. Meanwhile, here on Earth, a critical mass of the heretofore uncritical masses are awakening to a serious truth. There's something funny going on. Take politics, please. America's two political parties spent $4 billion in the last election, and it worked. The American people were soundly defeated. Once again, the golden rule was overruled by the rule of gold, and the Constitution overrun by the prostitution. The result is government in gridlock, and rule by a one-party system where we, the people, haven't been invited to the party. It was clear to the 15 of us who went to New Orleans 2 weeks ago that the majority of the residents in the lower Ninth Ward were never invited to the party. With their houses destroyed by the breaking of the levees during Hurricane Katrina, and so the people in New Orleans call it a federal disaster, not a natural disaster, many former residents had to find temporary living in other states. I was told that the city, however, would send property tax bills to where the homes used to be in the lower Ninth Ward, to a mailing address where a home no longer exists and the residents have not been able to return to rebuild. The result? The residents never knew about these bills, therefore did not pay them, and so the city took over the property. The real result, I was informed, is a gentrification of all of New Orleans. More and more whites are buying land that used to be owned by African Americans, land that was part of black families since the end of slavery. We currently have tens of thousands of American refugees who will never be able to return to the homes in New Orleans. Our youth will tell us more next week about their own experiences and perspective. But we all know that institutions and systems in this country continue to be racist and classist. Reverend Mark Wirth last week called it institutional and systemic racism. Racism finds new and different ways of expressing itself, but the bottom line is that blacks and other minorities continue to be disenfranchised and in different ways enslaved. We see this in the prison system, the judicial system, the workforce. We are just beginning to realize the extent of police racism and how lethal that can be for blacks. What has happened in Ferguson, Missouri, and Baltimore are not aberrations. I was told by a woman in New Orleans that the media emphasizes such places to the exclusion of her own city in New Orleans, where the killing of blacks by police is commonplace. She then proceeded to tell me details of some of the horrors, things I have never heard or read about. Racism and classism go hand in hand. We rarely talk about classism in this country. We're all supposedly equal, purportedly with equal opportunities for all men and women, though not quite yet for all genders. The Occupy movement made clear the stark economic inequities that exist in this country. When the bottom 80% of the population makes only 7% of the wealth, there's a serious problem with the kind of capitalism that exists here. I try hard not to blame individuals or people as a whole for the state of the universe. Though it's difficult sometimes not to do so when, for example, a president and his cronies manipulate a nation to invade two countries in the Middle East. But the evil that exists, exists in the systems and institutions we've created, not individuals. I wonder sometimes, though, if all individuals have become pawns of the military, industrial, pharmaceutical, prison, etc., etc., complex. Swami Bhayananda suggests that we have an uprising. We must wake up, wise up, and show up. At this moment of full realization, we fully realize our foolishness and laugh in our own face. Of course, this is what Jon Stewart and The Daily Show have done for many years. Hearty laughter, he says, brings us from the static of the head to the ecstatic of the heart. And we take the second step to upwising. We wise up loving. It has been said that the more we expand our hearts, the less we will need to shrink our heads. With laughter and love helping us wise to the occasion, we take the third step. We show up living and giving. Each of us has been given a special gift just for entering. We are all here to let our light fully shine. To show up means to live life fully and fully, laughing all the way. Express your unique love in the world and make your life a work of heart. The whole world is on the edge of its seat. Will we achieve critical mass before we reach critical massacre? Will there be an awakening or a wake? When it comes to transformation, we have all the time in the world, and that time is now. Now, I completely agree with the Swami. This is the spiritual imperative. But I'm not sure he goes far enough. The book of Job in the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament is really a treatise on the problem of evil and suffering. In theology, this is called theodicy. How can one reconcile one's suffering with a purportedly beneficent universe? Jesus asked the same question while dying. Why hast thou forsaken me? And a Jewish woman who learned that she had terminal cancer and was leaving her young family behind asked me a similar question when I was a student chaplain at Montreal General Hospital. She asked, why would God do this to me? Job, struggling to make sense of the seeming evil that has caused his suffering, is able to ask this question directly to God. And although God responds in a variety of ways, the story of Job ends without any real resolution. It ends ultimately in silence. We are all Jobs, struggling to make sense of our circumstances, our pain, our suffering. Maybe we find some kind of resolution. Maybe we no longer believe in God. Maybe we beseech the heavens only to find silence. Maybe we forgive. We all have to deal with the issue of theodicy, but it tends to be personal, private, and individual. The response to systemic, institutionalized evil in this country and in the world, however, must be communal. Racism and classism have to be opposed by prophetic faith communities like ours who can see through the war machine, the inept politics, the inequities of our current economic system, the idolatry of consumerism, and then stand on the side of love with our sisters and brothers and proclaim throughout the world that black lives matter, that Native Americans matter, that minorities matter and undocumented immigrants matter, that lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender, queer lives matter, poor people matter, homeless people matter, all people's lives matter. These are all spiritual matters. They all have to do with right relationships, the dignity of every human being, and the oneness of all of humanity. Job alone cannot count to demonic systems, but people together can. And that will be what we discuss during our congregational conversation this morning. What can we, as UUs at this church, concretely do? I do not know if there is some kind of God that sees or cares about our struggles or pain. Frankly, I'm not sure how much that actually matters. What I do know is that people in this country and world are dying and suffering. Suffering unnecessarily because of institutionalized racism, classism, bigotry, and prejudice. Our call, our task, our mission is to go beyond Job and actually do something about it. May it be so, and blessed be. Amen. Teal hymnal. 1028. 1028. Fire of commitment.